Mike Purge along with you on this Thursday edition of the Comment Program. And as we've been promising you, a visit today with some staff from the Cherry County Hospital here in Valentine. We have CEO Kyle Kellum. We also have Teresa May and Shirley Knutson, who have been here before talking about COVID-19. So good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good
morning. Morning, Mike. Thanks for having us.
I don't know that we had Kyle in here to talk about COVID before, but we've had you on once, I think, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Yep.
All right. So, well, we're going to throw you into the midst of the fire here today, I guess, as everybody's got COVID things on their mind as we approach the holiday season and those kind of things. And what I wanted to concentrate a little bit on today was how the COVID-19 has, we hear about the increased cases in Cherry County, how that has taxed our hospital staff and our medical staff, ambulance staff, all of those kind of things. So what kind of an impact are you seeing right now? As our numbers go up, are you guys seeing increased traffic at the hospital because of that?
Well, this is Teresa, and we are a critical access hospital, and we are licensed for 21 beds. However, we only have staffing for 10 beds. And in the last few weeks, we have seen at least 25 to 50% of our beds have been occupied by COVID positive patients.
So up to about 10 patients at a time in there. This is more critical than it was in March and April and May when we first started talking about COVID and everything, right?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things that as we transitioned into this new phase is before that we didn't necessarily have many cases. We had, at one point, I remember seeing 5 on the list for quite some time. And now we're approaching 300. And so it's just a whole different ballgame at this point.
Well, early in the thing, I guess Zach and I were talking a little bit about this the other day, that it was kind of like we were a little more prepared to do some things and take the precautions early on, and now everybody's gotten a little bit lax. And so now we're trying to get them to ramp up again and say, okay, we really need to buckle down and do this, all of these different things. So a lot of folks are kind of like, well, it's the boy that cried wolf syndrome, I guess, you know. So we need to stress to people that the biggest thing is, you could get sick and you may or may not end up in the hospital. Percentages say you probably wouldn't. But every one or two that shows up at the hospital stresses staff and the healthcare system a little bit more.
I want to back up just a little bit. Although we might be a 21-bed hospital, we have enough nursing staff to take care of 10 patients.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have 50% of our patients are COVID patients, that's 5 patients.
Okay. What do you do then if somebody comes in, if you're above the 10, whether it's COVID or not? I mean, how do you triage that or something and say, well, we have to find a bed for them somewhere else?
We do our best to take care of our people. And some of our COVID patients are too critical to stay here with us because we don't have all of the resources and the people to take care of the critically ill ones. So then we talk about transferring those. The other day, we had a young lady who was having a heart attack. And finding a hospital who had a bed to take just an ordinary heart attack was nearly impossible, let alone taking care of COVID patients that are critically ill, too.
So, Kyle, as a CEO, ultimately staffing, I think, kind of comes to your table at some time or the other.
Yeah.
So how do you fill the gaps in here? I mean, are you having to have people work extra hours, extra shifts?
It's a great question, and we definitely are, all of the above. We have folks working, whether it's a couple extra hours or working a couple extra shifts or more. We have open shifts that we look to fill with the existing staff that we have. But as this continues, it becomes a challenge of burnout, dare I say. The teams get tired, and rightfully so. Working with some very complex patients over the course of a 12-hour shift, putting on protective equipment, taking off protective equipment, time after time, it begins to wear on anybody. And, this is the teams that are in the front line of things. And so they are seeing, they're seeing some of the worst things that you can see in healthcare. And, it's not just a physical toll, it's also a mental toll. And it makes it very difficult for healthcare workers, whether you're in the nursing area or in housekeeping. They all participate in taking care of these patients. So what we're trying to do is we're consistently looking to ramp up our staffing, knowing that we need to have more folks coming in to help us take care of the patients. As Shirley alluded to, with the transferring of patients, at some point there will become a time, and that time is, it's really a day-by-day situation on how quickly we can transfer patients out, and if we can at all. But from some of the things that we're doing is looking at bringing in some locums. That's not always the best thing for the community, because we want to make sure that we have our own people taking care of our community, mm-hmm. that are familiar with the organization and familiar with the patients that come in. But it's definitely a better resource than not having a resource in general.
So when you start talking about agency staff, you and I had a little conversation on this the other day. Bringing in agency, which is basically, you'd say, a nursing agency that contracts to send people to you, that's expensive. That's way expensive to do that than it is for local people to take care of local people.
It is. It's highly expensive, and that rate keeps rising. We have some folks that are leaving their organizations to go and do the traveling just because the money is better. It's hard on the community. It's hard on an organization, hard on the patients. And so we're doing everything that we can to make sure that we are taking care of our own teams and making sure that they, want to keep coming back day after day, because it's a consistent challenge. And it's, like I said earlier, it's a burden on you physically and emotionally.
I think probably I would normally think it was one of the good things in the caring nature of people that get into the healthcare industry. They're not necessarily in it for the money on the local level. They're there to take care of people. And so they're stepping up to the plate and handling the bulk of the workload right now.
They are, at least from my perspective, I can tell you that I've had multiple conversations with nurses, and they're saying, hey, Kyle, I'm willing to do the work. I'm willing to come in. I just need, we just need help. We need to educate the community. We need to educate people that are maybe not believing in this, and I think that's really what we're here today to do is ask for help. We need the community to buy in and to understand that this is not going away anytime soon.
So what are the steps that people can do basically to help? Let's go back and recap. We keep hearing the school had just extended their holiday break for Thanksgiving for a couple extra days in there to give people a chance to deep clean the schools and take care of themselves. But the three C's, is that kind of what you guys are going by at this time?
Yes. Yeah, we're still asking people to mask and maybe even pleading for people to mask. Washing your hands and social distancing. I know people are really tired of hearing that, but that's where the science is at. And because we are nearing a vaccine, we do have some medications that are available to treat inpatients, and now a new drug that we are going to be getting that will be treating, that can treat outpatients. However, all of that stuff is not as good as it should be or could be yet. And I think it will be, but until we get there, we have to be able to survive. And those three C's are the ones that we are asking people to do. I understand if people haven't bought into it, but as a healthcare worker, I'm begging people to just, even if you haven't, just for my safety, if they would mask, wash their hands, and social distance.
So if you don't really necessarily believe all the stuff that's going on, because there's so many different conspiracy theories and stuff out there right now, do it for the hospital staff and the healthcare workers that you, the fact of the matter is you are seeing more cases of it come in. And the fact of the matter is that doing some of these social distancing and those things have been proven to work. There's some things that have been pretty steady throughout from March through now. There's been some factors that have stayed steady. Some have changed because they've learned a little bit more about it. But if you don't want to do it for yourself, then take a little extra precaution for the healthcare workers, that we don't want to burn out half our nursing staff and then we're going to really be in trouble.
I have to put a plug in also, wear your mask and wash your hands for the teachers too, because if you don't have teachers, then we don't have school and your kids need to stay in school.
What about the upcoming holidays? The schools have kind of set a tone here that they're going to give people an extra couple of days. When I first read that this morning, I thought, oh, well, that's a couple more days for people to get together and do things in groups that maybe they shouldn't be doing in there, or instead of just spending time with family. So from a healthcare standpoint, what do you recommend for the upcoming holiday season as what people should or shouldn't do?
This disease is very contagious, and it's pretty hard in the holidays to not have your family get-togethers. But I think you really need to back off and think about it. The healthcare departments and the people above us are expecting a huge surge in numbers 2 weeks after Thanksgiving and 2 weeks after Christmas. We're overwhelmed already. What are we going to do if we have more surge, more patients, more very sick patients?
You mentioned, Shirley, earlier about some different treatment options. So as we learn more about this now, and we keep hearing about vaccines in the news and everything, but have there been some new medications and things that they found out that are responsive in certain cases?
We currently use the drug remdesivir, and we're also using convalescent plasma. You have to be a hospitalized patient for those. We are just now getting information on a new drug called bamlanivimab.
We call it Bam Bam.
Okay, we'll go with that.
And it's a once treatment. You get it through an IV infusion for an hour, and we will have very limited doses. Most of that will be focused on our long-term care people, those who are just now coming down with the virus. If we treat them early, maybe we can prevent some of the complications for them.
Yes. So some people have minor symptoms. Maybe they have three or four of them. And at what point do people, should they go to the hospital? I mean, you guys already have a lot to do there and stuff, but when are you, quote, sick enough that you should be reporting to the ER?
Well, first of all, if you are having any of these symptoms, you should call first to kind of give us a heads up instead of just showing up. However, if you're having trouble breathing, persistent pain or pressure in your chest, new confusion, or if you have an inability to arouse somebody, or if you have blue-colored lips or like fingertips or in your face, those are all symptoms that you should call the hospital and come immediately.
Okay, so kind of keep that in mind. If you have a cough, call the hospital or your clinic and check with them. And if it gets a worse and doesn't go away, then I think your primary physician probably can kind of advise you of you need to do this or you need to do that.
Yes.
We get dozens of phone calls every day about, well, I've had a cough for 2 days. I'm coming in for a test. We probably won't test you. Don't bother coming in. Do the quarantine, the self-isolation stuff at home. We're saving our tests for those who are critically ill, not just because you need a test to go back to work or a note to go back to work or just because you want to see if you have the disease. We probably won't test you.
They're doing three tests a week now, aren't they, at the Methodist Church, which is sponsored through the hospital, but it kind of gets less congestion around the hospital building. But they're doing three tests a week. I remember right, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Is that right, Teresa? Do you know?
Yes. 1:30 to 3:30 at the on the north side of the Methodist Church. That's Test Nebraska, and even that takes extra people as well to run those. So we, but they are doing them three times a week: Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 1:30 to 3:30, and they have had some good numbers. I talked to Kristen this morning, who is kind of spearheading that for the hospital, and she said that I think already this week we've tested over 70 people. So that's good. We keep coming.
Do you know what the percentage of positive tests is out of that, or do they give that to you?
No, we don't. We're not privy to that.
That's not on that pay scale?
No. Kyle, I need to rise.
Yeah.
If you choose to use the Test Nebraska, please go to the Test Nebraska website and start the paperwork. And if you have questions about it, call the clinic rather than the hospital because they have more answers than we do.
So testing three times a week, that's probably going to see our numbers continue to go up, I would think. Because some people that have been asymptomatic never got tested for it, never knew anything about it, so they probably didn't quarantine or anything like that. But so I would expect we're going to see an uptick in the numbers, whether they're asymptomatic or not, coming up here in the next few weeks as well.
Yes.
How long will they continue 3 days a week? Do you know?
We'll be going with 3 days a week for the next 6 months.
Okay.
And or until the state says that it's not needed, and we'll evaluate that on a regular basis with the state to see the next steps.
I think one thing that's kept people away from getting tested is the fact that there's been so many horror stories about how nasty the test was or anything, but they've changed some of the testing procedures, haven't they? I thought somebody said they have a rapid test now. I don't know for sure what the rapid test is, and that they didn't have to do the deep nasal swab on everybody all the time, but
you still have to have the deep nasal swab for all of the tests.
Okay.
They haven't come up with a blood test or a saliva test yet, so it's still going to be in the nose.
We have three vaccines, but they still have to poke your brain to get find out if you've got it or not.
That's so. Right.
And also, we do not have the rapid test here in Valentine for Test Nebraska.
What is that?
It's the rapid test is like you know immediately within 15 minutes or so. But it's for us, it still takes, they're saying 30 to 72 hours. And so, I mean, it just probably depends on how many tests have not necessarily have been collected from Valentine, but have been collected throughout the state.
And normally it's still taking 2 to 3 days to get test results back, something like that, maybe 3 or 4.
From Test Nebraska.
Yeah. From Test Nebraska. Okay. All right. I had a call. There it is. A question about masks. In regards to masks, what percentage does it protect the person who doesn't have it if the other person has it, if someone isn't sick?
The health department talked about that yesterday. The statistics are showing that if you wear a mask, you are 63% less likely to get the disease, even if you don't do the social distancing. So if you wore your mask and did the social distancing, your risk of getting the disease is even less.
Okay. And, of course, when we mentioned the 3 C's about close contact with people, and I think the state is cutting back on size limits for some of the big gatherings and those kind of things that have been cut down a little bit there as well. So I know the governor is going to be back on Monday, and he'll probably have some new things to say about that. But so I know the schools, we talked to Mike Holly here a week or so ago, I think it was, maybe 10 days ago, and they said one of the things was, if you wear a mask and somebody that you're around has a mask, you may not have to quarantine as much, or in the schools anyway. It cuts down on the number of quarantines because if they had a mask, you had a mask, and they might have tested positive. But if you had a mask on, you might get off the hook a little bit lighter, a little lighter sentence there or something. So they're still saying, basically, if you have symptoms, quarantine yourself for 2 weeks. If you have tested positive, you need to isolate yourself for, is it still 2 weeks?
10 days to 2 weeks.
10 days to 2 weeks. Till the end of symptoms, and then you need to get a test again?
Not necessarily. In our facility.
Okay. So what is this, if you have it once, can you get it again? Do we know yet? I mean, because that's kind of a common thing. People go, well, I've had it once, so, you know, I'm not going to get it again. But I think there have been some documented cases. I don't know the locally, but what I've heard on the national news, which sometimes you got to take with a grain of salt, but they say there have been people that have been confirmed with it a couple times.
There are studies saying that you may remain testing positive up to 90 days. That doesn't mean you're contagious for those 90 days, but you may continue to test positive. During that time, you're showing a little bit of immunity. After those 90 days, it's starting to look like, yes, you can get reinfected, although your illness may not be quite as severe as the first time.
So I might be going above your pay grade here, but we now know there's, I think, 3 vaccines that are being pretty close to being approved or anything. So what's the effectiveness of them? Because I thought usually they give you a little dose of the disease or whatever it is, and then you build up your immunity to it. But is that going to work with COVID-19, or are you going to have to get a shot every 90 days or something?
As far as getting them one annually every 6 months, they haven't come up with that yet. There is one of the vaccines that is 95% effective. So that's better than the flu shot.
But it is looking like you will have to have 2 shots, but at least this year.
Right.
But it's still too early in the decision-making and testing to know for sure.
And have any of those been approved by the FDA at this time for final?
No, not for final.
So it's still going to be a while, probably the first of the year maybe.
That's before, what they're saying.
And then there will be, I think the procedure has been to go to hospitals, healthcare workers, frontline workers, nursing homes, those kind of things would be getting those kind of vaccinations first.
Yes.
And then they trickle down to the public at large, I guess, later on. Is that right?
Right.
All right. Do you guys have anything that I haven't asked you about yet? I mean, we talked a little bit about the holidays coming up. People should probably still try to social distance with your immediate family there if you can. I was going to ask you about procedures. Are elected surgery procedures? Let's say I needed knee surgery or something. Are you still being able to do that here now, or are you having to postpone those?
So with the new directive health measures, anything that's on the inpatient side for those kinds of things are, and we have postponed. And so we had some surgeries that will be coming up, and we've had to say we can't do them right now. And for a couple of reasons. One, the governor has said, hey, these are the new rules. But two is we have to make sure that we have available beds for those patients that are coming in and needing them.
So that's another reason that people need to take things serious. And try to keep the healthcare field protected, because if you got to have knee surgery down the road, you don't want your knee surgery canceled because of hospital bed space and stuff.
Yeah.
So let's see. What else do we have? Do you guys have anything else that we need to cover?
The hospital and clinic have been very innovative in doing our best to keep our patients and facilities safe and healthy. And we have several lines of germ defense.
Yes, we do. We have... Some new things, some new techniques, and new robots in-house. We have an ionization system that goes through our HVAC system that purifies the air coming in. So that's one element of the cleanliness that we're doing in the organization. The other piece is we have what's called a TrueD robot, and that's uses ultraviolet light to disinfect patient rooms, restrooms, I mean, every area of the organization. To make sure that we're keeping people as safe as possible. And so we're very proud of. And we feel like actually, while if you have to come to the hospital, is probably one of the cleanest environments that you're going to be coming into.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
You got any job openings there?
Lots.
Yeah. Are you a nurse, Mike?
No, I'm not. I've removed my own stitches and pulled my grandkids' teeth out when they come out. I was going to brought up another question there about the volunteers at the hospital. They used to have some volunteers within the hospital, and I don't know, maybe this whole thing has nixed that of anybody coming in that's not certified or whatever. Are there spaces for volunteers to come and help if they'd like to somehow?
Yeah, we initially put a hold on the volunteer program as a whole, and we've started that back up, knowing that there's some risk. So what we've done so far is say, if you're comfortable, if you feel like this is something that you can do and you're comfortable with that risk, you know, then we're willing to talk with those folks to volunteer at the organization.
So you might be able to help out somewhere behind the scenes or something like that. They're not going to have you poking IVs into people right away.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Teresa and Shirley get to do that stuff. So, but anyway, all right. So what about lab works and those kind of things? That's still... If somebody gets sent up to the hospital for lab work and those kind of things, are still outpatient type things happening?
Yep.
Yes. We screen everybody when they come in the door. What symptoms have you had? We take your temperature.
And I do know that it is kind of, people are tired of answering those questions, but they are, things change. And so so just know that you're still going to get asked, just a lot like we do when you come in and ask for your medications each time. We're going to ask you if you've had a cough or, you know, runny nose, fever, et cetera. You're going to get it at least three times before you get through the front door.
Has anything changed about the age groups? Initially, we were all talking about 70 and above or something like that. 65 and above were critical groups that needed to watch out for things. But then we've heard about younger people getting it. And has that changed, or are we still kind of looking at the older my age and above?
Well, the interesting thing is the older, the 70 and older groups tend to stay home and wear their masks. It's the 25 to 45 age groups that don't do that so much. They are still very social, having their parties. They're out and about to dinner, and they don't wear their mask, and they are getting sick. Not as critically ill as the older people are, because they don't have the other comorbid illnesses that we talk about, like heart problems, hypertension, and things like that. So the younger people, there's more of them with the disease, just not as ill.
All right. Anything else? We've covered a lot of ground in there. Kyle's always open to talk to people if they want to call the hospital.
Absolutely. Yeah, feel free. And I would just want to add one thing, Mike, and kind of really how we started is we're really here asking for help from the community. This is a team effort, and we need Shirley and Teresa and the rest of this healthcare team available to take care of our patients and to take care of everybody that walks through the door, whether it's COVID or a heart attack, or a broken ankle. So we need help to get through this. And while we did at the very beginning of this whole pandemic, maybe we shut down too early. I'm not one to judge that. But the fact is that we do need it. We need to take these measures now. We can't keep going. We can't keep sustaining in the manner that we're doing at this time.
All right. Shirley, Teresa, anything to add?
I think he said it.
Yeah. I have one other question. Somebody had just called in. Are there any over-the-counter supplements or anything that can help?
Well, that's a good question. We just talked about that. There, a few weeks ago, were a whole list of supplements that you could try taking. Problem is, with a lot of them, like zinc and vitamin D and vitamin C, you can overdose on some of those. They're not regulated. They're not prescribed. But there are studies now showing that things like lots of vitamin D is probably useless. They're still studying zinc, and vitamin C you can always take. That's good for you during cold and flu seasons too. But there's more and more research coming out that these supplements may not be of much benefit.
So stay tuned for further details.
Yep.
All right. Well, Shirley, Teresa, Kyle, we appreciate you coming in to spend some time with us today, and feel free to contact us, come back, and hopefully some relief is in sight soon.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.